She had been missing for only a few hours when the search began, but everyone who knew Zhifan understood something was wrong. Her phone, always charged, had gone silent. Her messages, usually warm and quick, stopped without warning. Snow fell over the quiet Salt Lake neighborhood, soft at first, then heavy enough to blur the edges of the streetlights. Officers moved through the cold with flashlights raised, calling her name, following footprints that faded almost as soon as they formed. Inside a small apartment nearby, a single lamp burned. Its glow leaked through thin curtains, steady, almost peaceful, hiding the truth waiting behind the door. One officer knocked and waited. Another circled the building, eyes on the windows, breath rising in slow white clouds. The door opened late, too late, and what they found inside ended every doubt about where she had gone. By morning, the question was no longer where Zhifan was. It was why no one protected her when she asked. Chapter 1, The First Cracks. Zhifan had been in Utah for only a few months when the cold settled in. It was a different kind of cold than she had known before. The air felt thin and bright, and the mountain peaks in the distance stayed white even on clear days. She carried her books close to her chest on her walk to class, moving through campus with a quiet focus that drew little attention. She liked routines, morning tea, afternoon study sessions, evening calls home. She did not need many friends to feel comfortable. A few kind faces were enough. She met Hao Yu during an early tutoring session. He sat beside her at a long table, and at first he seemed thoughtful and patient. He offered her help with assignments when she struggled with an unfamiliar concept. He remembered small details about her background. For a while, she believed he meant well. He was another student trying to settle in, and she felt comfort in having someone who understood the challenge of adjusting so far from home. Their connection formed quickly, more quickly than she expected. They started taking walks together after class. He texted her every morning, asking if she had slept well. In the beginning, his attention felt warm. He held doors for her. He carried her backpack when it was heavy. He called her cute names and made her laugh. She liked that he checked on her when the weather turned sharp and icy. She liked that he cared enough to notice when she was tired. But the warmth began to feel like something else. One evening, while they sat together in her dorm lounge, he took her phone from her hand and scrolled through her messages without asking. He handed it back with a quiet smile, acting as if nothing was wrong. She did not know what to say, so she said nothing. Maybe he was only curious. Maybe he meant nothing by it. But the unease stayed with her as she walked back to her room. A week later, he asked for her class schedule. She shared it without thinking. He started showing up outside her classrooms before she was finished. He stayed close as she packed her bag and followed her across campus. He called it being protective. She tried to see it the way he framed it. She told herself he was thoughtful, maybe too thoughtful at times. The first real argument happened on a cold night in November. She wanted to study alone. He wanted to sit with her. She explained that she needed space to concentrate, but he grew frustrated. His voice rose. He stepped too close. A neighbor opened the door down the hall to check what was happening, then slowly closed it again. No one said anything, and the moment passed. Afterward, he apologized and brought her snacks from the student market. He said he had been stressed, that he cared too much. She accepted the apology because it felt easier than confronting the growing unease. By December, the tension came in waves. Some days he was sweet, attentive, and gentle. Other days he snapped over small things. She learned to watch his expression when he approached her. She learned to read the quiet in between his words. She began adjusting her routines to avoid conflict. If he wanted to see her, she agreed. If he wanted to know where she was, she told him. She thought it would help keep the peace, but the peace never lasted long. One afternoon, she confided in a friend from her chemistry class. She kept her voice low and tried to choose each word carefully. She explained that Hao Yu was acting controlling. She said she felt nervous around him when they argued. The friend listened closely and encouraged her to reach out to campus housing. She did not want to feel like she was overreacting, but deep down she knew something about the relationship had shifted into dangerous territory. She went to the front desk at her dorm and filled out an incident report. The student worker behind the counter looked uncertain about how to help. He said someone would follow up. She left feeling embarrassed, but also relieved that she had taken a step toward protecting herself. She returned to her room and sat on the bed for a long time, letting the quiet settle around her. 2 days passed before she heard anything. A resident assistant knocked on her door one evening. They stood in the hallway and talked softly. The RA was kind, but inexperienced. She apologized for not knowing exactly what to do and said she would escalate the report. She asked Jifan if she wanted to move to another room. Jifan nodded yes. She did not want Haoyu to know where she slept. That night, Haoyu showed up unannounced. He knocked on her door for several minutes. She sat on her bed frozen, listening to the steady rhythm. She did not open it. Eventually, he stopped and walked away, but she could hear the anger in his footsteps as they faded down the hallway. She waited until she was sure he was gone before she exhaled. Her hands were shaking. The next morning, she asked the RA if the room transfer had been approved. It had not. The paperwork was moving slowly because the semester break was near, and several staff members were already away. She felt a wave of helplessness wash through her. She had asked for help, yet nothing seemed to move. Another argument broke out the following week. This time it happened outside her dorm near a row of bare trees. The wind stung her cheeks as he demanded to know why she had not answered his messages. He stepped toward her, voice sharp, trying to corner her where the walkway narrowed. A student passing by glanced in their direction and kept walking. She backed away and told him to calm down. He lowered his voice only when another pair of students approached. Later that night, she cried quietly in her room. She sent a message to the RA explaining what had happened. The RA replied that she would try to get someone from housing to speak with her the next day. She clutched her blanket to her chest and wished she could disappear from campus entirely. The meeting finally happened in a small office near the admin wing. A staff member asked her questions about the relationship. Jifan answered as clearly as she could. She explained the controlling behavior, the arguments, the way he monitored her. The staff member typed notes and said they would look into it. Jifan felt small, like her words were drops of water sliding off a smooth surface. Nothing stuck. Nothing felt urgent. She asked again about moving rooms. The staff member nodded, but said housing was limited. They would do their best. She left the office feeling half hopeful and half afraid. That night, she stayed with a friend across campus. She pretended she was only there to study and watch a movie, but the friend knew something was wrong. They sat together on the floor and talked late into the night. Jifan said she did not want to be afraid in her own room. She said she felt trapped between wanting to end the relationship and fearing what he might do if she tried. The friend urged her to speak to campus police. She went the next day. The officer behind the desk did not seem surprised. He listened to her describe the arguments and controlling behavior. He nodded slowly and asked a few questions. Then he explained that the situation sounded like a relationship dispute. He said they could document it, but there was little else they could do unless something more serious happened. She walked out of the station feeling colder than the wind outside. Over the next week, she kept her distance from Haoyu. She stopped responding to his calls. She stopped meeting him after class. She hoped the silence would create enough space for him to move on. But he only tried harder. He appeared near her building at random hours. He sent long messages apologizing, promising he would change. She deleted them, but read each one first because she could not shake the feeling that ignoring him might make things worse. One night, he caught her outside the dining hall. He stepped in front of her, blocking her path. His eyes were tired and restless. He asked why she kept avoiding him. He said he needed to talk. She kept her arms close to her body and said she was late for a study session. He grabbed her wrist, not tightly, but firmly enough to make her heart race. She pulled her arm back. A student walking by slowed down and looked at them. Haoyu let go. She walked away without looking back. She could feel her pulse in her hands. That night, she wrote another message to housing explaining that the situation was escalating. She said she felt unsafe and needed to move as soon as possible. The reply came the next morning. They were working on it. They needed more time. Time was the one thing she did not have. Her sleep grew shallow. her appetite faded. She walked through campus with her shoulders tense and her eyes scanning corners, buildings, and sidewalks. She carried her phone in her hand instead of her pocket. She stayed near crowded areas whenever she could. A few days later, the RA checked in again. She asked if Jafon wanted to file another report. She asked if she wanted to stay somewhere else for the night. Jafon said she did not know what to do anymore. She said she felt powerless. The RA promised to push the paperwork again. She promised she would not let the situation be ignored. But promises did not move fast enough. On a quiet afternoon after class, Jafon sat on a bench near the science building. The sky was pale and cloudless. Students passed in small groups, talking about exams and winter plans. She watched them and felt removed, as if she were watching a world she no longer belonged to. She wondered how everything had changed so quickly. She wondered how a tension that once felt safe could transform into fear that kept her awake at night. Her phone buzzed, a message from Haoyu. He wrote that he needed to see her. He wrote that he missed her. He wrote that things would be different. She put the phone down beside her. She did not reply. She closed her eyes for a moment and breathed deeply. She told herself she had done everything she was supposed to do. She reached out for help. She tried to create distance. She filed the reports, attended the meetings, spoke to police, spoke to housing. She tried to make them understand how serious the situation felt. She tried to keep herself safe. But as she opened her eyes and watched a small group of students cross the courtyard, a new fear crept in, soft but certain. No one was going to reach her in time. The small things that had felt like early warnings had become something else. The sharp tone in his voice, the way he watched her walk away, the messages that shifted from apology to blame, the anger in his posture, the persistence, the unpredictability. She picked up her phone again and stared at the screen. She thought about calling her friend. She thought about calling her parents. Instead, she stood and walked toward her dorm, hands deep in her coat pockets, shoulders hunched against the cold. Behind her, the mountains caught the last light of the day. The shadows stretched long across campus as the sun slipped behind the peaks. Inside the dorm building, the air was warm and stale. She climbed the stairs slowly, each step heavier than the last. She unlocked her door and stepped inside, closing it softly behind her. For a moment, everything was still. Then her phone buzzed again. She flinched. She picked it up and turned it over in her hand. Another message from him. Another request to talk. She deleted it without reading the rest. She sat on her bed and wrapped her arms around her knees. She tried to think of something hopeful. A new semester, a new room, a future where she felt safe again. But the quiet in her room felt thin, as if something pressed against it from the outside. She lay back slowly and stared at the ceiling. She told herself it would be better soon. She told herself someone would help her. She told herself the danger had not yet reached her door. But deep down, she knew the truth. It was coming closer every day, and the question hanging over her was simple. Would anyone stop it before it was too late? Chapter 2, The Spiral. In the weeks that followed, the campus slipped deeper into winter. Snow gathered in soft drifts along the walkways. The trees stood bare and dark against the gray sky. Students moved quickly between buildings with their heads down, wrapped in scarves and heavy jackets. The cold made everything feel slower. For Jafon, it made the loneliness feel sharper. She kept her distance from Haoyu as best she could. She changed her routes to class. She sat in different seats. She stayed later in the library so she could walk back with other students instead of alone. She stopped answering his calls completely. Each message she ignored added a thin layer of guilt over her fear, but she stayed firm. She knew she could not go back to how things had been. He did not accept the distance. The messages shifted from apology to accusation. At first, he wrote that he missed her, that he wanted to fix things. When she did not reply, he wrote that she was being unfair. He reminded her of favors he had done, times he had helped her. He said she owed him at least a conversation. When she still did not respond, the tone turned colder. He wrote that she was making him into someone he did not want to be. She saved the messages without knowing why. Maybe she hoped they would matter to someone later. Maybe she just needed proof that the fear she felt was not in her imagination. Her friend from chemistry noticed the change in her. She saw the dark circles under her eyes and the way she flinched when her phone buzzed. They began staying together more often, studying in common areas and walking back in groups. The friend urged her again to push the school for action. She said that if the system did not take the situation seriously, they had to keep pressing until someone listened. So she tried again. She went back to the housing office, clutching her phone with the saved messages. A different staff member sat behind the desk this time. She explained that she had already filed a report. She said the situation was worse now. She said the messages felt threatening. The staff member nodded and asked for her student ID number. She typed for a long time, eyes on the screen, then frowned. The original report had been filed, but the follow-up was incomplete. Some fields were missing. No one had marked the situation as urgent. It sat in a general queue, mixed with noise complaints and roommate disagreements. The staff member apologized and said it must have been an oversight. She promised to fix it and forward everything to the appropriate office. The words sounded right but felt thin. Jifan left the office with a fresh ache in her chest. She thought about the time between when she first asked for help and now. She thought of all the days she had spent waiting for a room change that never happened. She thought of the conversations that ended with promises and not much else. That night, she stayed off campus for the first time. Her friend offered a couch in a small apartment a few streets away. The place was cluttered with textbooks and mismatched furniture, but it felt safe. They watched a movie on a laptop and ate instant noodles. For a few hours, the tension in her shoulders loosened. She laughed once or twice, surprised at the sound. But even there, the messages found her. Her phone buzzed on the coffee table. She did not pick it up, but she could see his name on the screen. Message after message. She turned the phone face down. Her friend watched her and asked if she wanted to block him. She said she was not sure. Blocking him felt like lighting a fuse. She worried that cutting off contact completely would trigger something worse. They went to sleep late. The apartment was quiet, except for the hum of the heater. In the dark, her mind replayed every conversation she had ever had with him, the good moments and the bad, tangled together. She wondered when exactly the line had been crossed. She wondered if there had been a single decision that could have changed everything, or whether this was always where things were headed. The next morning, she returned to campus early. The sky was pale blue, and the air burned her lungs with each breath. As she reached the edge of the main path, she saw him. He stood near the dorm entrance, hands shoved into his pockets, eyes fixed on the door. He wore a dark jacket and a knitted hat pulled low. He looked tired, like he had not slept. For a brief second, she considered turning around and walking away, but he spotted her. His face brightened in a way that made her stomach tighten. "Where were you last night?" he asked. She did not owe him an answer, but the habit of explaining herself was hard to break. She told him she had stayed with a friend. He stepped closer, searching her face. "You stayed with someone else," he said. "It was just a friend," she replied. "I needed space." He smiled, but the smile did not reach his eyes. He said he understood that things had been tense. He said he wanted to start over. He asked if they could get coffee and talk. His voice was softer now, almost pleading. She shook her head. She said she did not want to argue anymore. She said they should not see each other. The quiet between them grew heavy. For a brief moment, she thought he might accept it. Instead, his jaw tightened. He took a slow breath. "You think you can just walk away?" he asked. The words were quiet but sharp. She felt herself step back without meaning to. Another student walked past them toward the building. The presence of someone else at least kept the moment from breaking open. Haoyu's eyes flicked to the other student, then back to her. "We will talk later," he said. It was not a question. She went inside. Her hands shook as she found the stairs. She wished she had stayed off campus. She wished she did not have to see him at all. That afternoon, she received an email from housing. The subject line was dry and formal. Inside, the message explained that they were still working on reassignment options. There were limited open beds. They were reviewing her case. They thanked her for her patience. She stared at the word patience for a long time. Later that week, a small meeting was scheduled with a housing representative and a campus safety officer. It took place in a neutral conference room with beige walls and a long table. She sat in a chair near the middle, fingers laced tightly in her lap. The housing representative sat across from her with a tablet. The safety officer sat to one side, arms folded. They asked her to describe the situation again. She repeated the same details she had given before: the arguments, the controlling behavior, the unexpected appearances outside her dorm. She showed them some of the messages. They scrolled through them, faces unreadable. The housing representative suggested a mediated conversation with Hao Yu. "We have found that sometimes these situations can be resolved through structured dialogue," she said. "It can help both parties feel heard." The idea made Jifan feel cold. She did not want a conversation. She wanted distance. She said she did not feel comfortable sitting alone with him. The safety officer said that if mediation happened, it would be in a supervised environment. He said they would be present. She still said no. The room fell quiet. The housing representative shifted in her seat. She said they still needed to follow policy. She said they would mark the situation as a concern and keep documenting it. The words sounded careful and rehearsed, more focused on procedure than urgency. When the meeting ended, the safety officer walked her to the door. He told her to call their office if anything escalated. He told her to keep saving messages. He told her that sometimes these situations calm down over time. She left feeling more alone than before. Across campus, in a small off-campus shop, Hao Yu stood at a counter, paying in cash. The clerk placed a few items into a plain bag: cleaning supplies, over-the-counter medication, a bottle of something that could numb. The clerk did not ask questions. It was just another sale in a long day. On the walk back to his place, his thoughts moved in uneven circles. He replayed old conversations with her. The early days, when everything felt easy. The later days, when every small thing turned into a fight. He remembered how she used to lean on him when the weather was too cold. He remembered how she had stopped doing that. The memory of that change burned more than the wind on his face. In his mind, he was the one who had been abandoned. Every boundary she tried to set twisted into an act of betrayal in his thoughts. Isolation muttered to him in the quiet of his room. He spent hours alone, staring at his phone. Each unanswered message fed a story he told himself about what she must be thinking, who she must be with, how quickly she must have forgotten him. He opened a drawer and placed the new items inside. He closed it again with a soft click. Back on campus, rumors started to move through the dorms in small whispers. Some students had seen arguments in the hallway. Others had heard raised voices outside the building. A few knew enough to be worried, but not enough to act. They traded fragments of what they had seen, but none of them carried the full picture. One night, a student on Jifan's floor heard a brief exchange through the thin walls. Voices, tense and low, a door closing sharply, footsteps in the hall. It was over quickly, but it left a residue of unease. The student considered telling someone at the front desk, then decided it was not serious enough. People fought, couples argued. It was not their business. The next morning, an internal message traveled through a digital system inside the housing office. It flagged her case as requiring follow-up. The message was tagged for a specific staff member. The staff member was out of office for a training. The message sat in a queue. No one reassigned it. On another floor, the RA sat at her desk, scrolling through her own list of tasks. She saw Zifan's name with a note that follow-up had been scheduled. She assumed the housing office had things under control. She did not know about the misrouted message. She did not know about the items in the drawer off campus. She did not know that time was shrinking. Days blended into each other. Jifan tried to focus on her classes, but every assignment felt distant. She watched other students talk about exam dates and holiday plans, and she felt like she was standing behind glass. Her world had narrowed to a few simple questions. Where was he? Was he nearby? Would she run into him if she went to the dining hall, the library, the bus stop? She started picking up shifts in the library, hoping the structured environment would give her some sense of control. The quiet rows of shelves and the predictable tasks helped a little. She checked in books. She straightened displays. She walked the aisles with a small cart, returning items to their places. One evening, as she rolled the cart down a row, she noticed a figure at the end of the aisle, For a moment, she thought it was him. Her heart jumped. Her grip tightened on the cart handle. Then the person turned and she saw it was someone else. A stranger with the same dark jacket, not the same eyes. Relief washed through her, but it was thin. The fear had become a habit. Her friend tried to keep her grounded. They studied together and ate meals together. They practiced for exams and made plans to watch movies after finals. The friend encouraged her to consider going to a shelter or seeking outside support. To talk to someone who specialized in domestic violence, not just campus staff. Jifan hesitated. The thought of involving outsiders felt overwhelming. She did not want to make things bigger, even though they already felt too big. She still believed on some level that if she kept her distance, if she stayed quiet, things might settle. She did not want her story to become a case number somewhere else. One late afternoon, as the sun dropped behind the mountains, her phone buzzed with a new type of message. He wrote that he understood now. He wrote that he had been thinking a lot. He wrote that he knew he had scared her and that he was working on himself. He called it a process. He said he was ready to talk in a calm way. The words were careful and gentle. It was the language of someone who had read about therapy, control, and change. He sprinkled in phrases about growth and self-awareness. He told her she had helped him see his flaws. He said he wanted to thank her in person. It was love bombing in softer colors. She stared at the message and felt the pull of the past. The early days, the walks, the small kindnesses. The part of her that wanted to believe people could change leaned in. The part of her that had sat in offices and heard slow promises leaned back. She did not answer. That night, as snow fell again outside her window, he opened the drawer in his room and looked at the items inside. He took one out, turned it in his hand, put it back, closed the drawer. The quiet in the room pressed against him. The story he told himself about what was happening grew darker. On campus, the system that was supposed to protect her continued to stumble. A report that should have triggered a second review was logged under the wrong category. The word harassment was selected instead of threat. That small choice shifted how the case appeared on a dashboard somewhere. The urgency dropped. A campus police officer received a summary of recent concerns in housing. The summary did not include all of her details. It noted a past relationship issue, not an active pattern. The officer scanned the list and moved on to other tasks. There were theft reports, vandalism, a noise complaint that had turned into a fight. The list was long. In the dorm, the RA stopped by her door again. She asked how things were going. She offered to meet for tea. Jifan thanked her and said she was managing. She did not want to sound dramatic. She did not want to be the student who complained all the time. She did not want to feel like a burden. Still, each night before she slept, she checked that her door was locked. She placed a chair under the handle, not because it would stop anyone for long, but because the sound of it moving would wake her if someone tried to enter. Her world shrank to these small measures. One evening, her friend sat across from her at a table in the dining hall. The place hummed with quiet conversation. The smell of food and the clatter of dishes filled the air. The friend watched her push food around on her plate and finally spoke. "You cannot live like this," she said gently. "You have to decide something. Either you leave, or you make the system hear you, or you end it in a way that is clear and final. You cannot stay in this middle place." The words landed heavily. She knew they were true. The middle place was wearing her down. The silence, the waiting, the constant scanning. She swallowed and nodded slowly. "I will talk to him one last time," she said. "I will tell him clearly that it is over. No more messages. No more contact." Her friend frowned, but did not argue. She knew that pushing too hard could backfire. Instead, she asked if she could be nearby when it happened, if she could at least know where and when the conversation would take place. Jifan promised she would not go alone. As she lay in bed that night, staring at the ceiling once again, her decision settled over her like a heavy blanket. She would end it clearly. She would choose the time and place. She would take back what little control she still had. She did not know, as she drifted toward uneasy sleep, that on the other side of town he was staring at his own ceiling, thinking about that same conversation. She did not know that while she hoped for closure, the story building in his mind was very different. and she did not know that when she finally decided to cut ties completely, the real danger would begin. Chapter 3, The Last Crossing. The morning she chose to end things, the sky was a dull gray. It had snowed lightly overnight, just enough to cover the sidewalks in a thin powder that crunched under each step. Shifen woke before her alarm, her thoughts already circling the decision she had made. She lay still for a moment, breathing slowly, letting the weight of the day settle over her. She felt tired, but also strangely calm. She had rehearsed the conversation in her mind so many times that the words felt worn and steady. She got dressed carefully, choosing warm layers and a simple jacket. She brushed her hair, tied her shoes, and checked her phone. No new messages yet. She knew that would not last long. She made tea, but left it untouched on her desk, the steam fading into the cold air. She glanced at the chair she kept under her door handle at night and moved it aside. The silence in her room felt different today. Not lighter, but clearer. Like the edge of a long climb where the path turns toward a final slope. Her friend texted her just after 8, a short message, asking if she was still planning to talk to him, asking where she wanted to meet. Jifen replied that she planned to choose a public place, a campus walkway near the student center, open enough that they would not be alone. Her friend agreed to stay nearby, not close enough to be seen, but close enough to help if needed. She stepped outside, pulling her coat tighter around her. The cold air stung her cheeks and made her eyes water. Students crossed the courtyard in steady streams, backpacks bouncing lightly against their shoulders. Conversations floated around her, fragments of stress over exams and travel plans. She moved through it all, like a quiet shadow. Her mind focused on the approaching conversation. Haoyu had not messaged yet, but she knew he would. She walked across campus toward the meeting spot. Snow clung to the bare branches overhead. Cars moved slowly along the nearby street, tires crunching over frozen slush. She paused near the stairs leading up to the center. A few students lingered outside, checking their phones or waiting for friends. She scanned the area, making sure she had clear exits on both sides. Her friend texted again, telling her she was close. Then her phone buzzed with a familiar name. He wrote that he had been thinking all night, that he wanted to talk, that he understood why she needed distance, that he wanted to meet somewhere quiet. He suggested a side street near the apartments off campus. He said a public spot was too loud, that they needed privacy. She stared at the message. Her first instinct was to refuse. She looked around the busy walkway. She looked toward the building where her friend waited. She typed a reply saying she wanted to meet here, near other people. Her thumb hovered over the send button before she tapped it. The answer came fast. He wrote that he was already nearby. He wrote that he was walking toward her. He wrote that he could see the student center from where he stood. She turned her head slowly. At the far end of the walkway, she saw him cutting through the drifting snow. He wore the same dark jacket she had seen him in before. His pace was steady, almost calm. There was no visible anger on his face, but something in his expression made her pulse quicken. She texted her friend, "He is here." Her friend replied, "I can see you, I'm behind the benches." Jifen stayed where she was. She drew a slow, shaky breath and reminded herself of the words she planned to use. Clear, firm, no room for negotiation. She stepped forward as he approached. She kept a few feet of space between them. He stopped in front of her and studied her face. His breathing was uneven, as if he had rushed the last part of the walk. "You look tired," he said softly. "I have been worried." She kept her voice steady. "We need to talk." He nodded as if he had been expecting that. "I want to fix things," he said. "I am ready to change." She shook her head. "It is over." The words were simple, but they cost her more than she expected. She felt the force of them in her chest. She saw them land in his expression like a sudden wind. His jaw tightened, but he did not step closer. "No," he said, "you do not mean that." "I do," she replied. He looked away for a moment, scanning the walkway. Students moved around them without paying much attention. He looked back at her, his eyes darker now. "Then we cannot talk here," he said. "There are too many people. Come with me." She shook her head again. "No." The silence between them thickened. He took a step back, running a hand through his hair, as if trying to gather himself. "I need to explain," he said. "Just for a few minutes, somewhere quiet, please. You owe me that." She felt her stomach twist. "I do not owe you anything," she said. The words were true, but they broke something open in him. His face shifted into something she could not immediately read. Anger, hurt, confusion, all mixed together in a way that made her heart race. He took one step forward, then stopped himself. He lowered his voice. "If you walk away now," he said, "something will break." She stayed still. Her hands were cold, even inside her gloves. He looked over her shoulder toward the benches. Her friend leaned forward, watching closely. He saw her. For a moment, the presence of someone else held the situation in place. His posture eased. He took a small step back. "I will call you later," he said. "We will finish this conversation." She said nothing. He turned slowly and walked away, his footsteps leaving sharp marks in the fresh snow. She watched him until he disappeared behind a building. Her friend hurried over. "Are you all right?" her friend asked. She nodded, though she felt unsteady. "He wants to talk again." "Do not meet him alone," her friend said. "Not ever." Jafon agreed. She told herself the worst part was over. She told herself that ending it clearly would help him accept it. She told herself he would eventually let go. But deep inside, she felt a faint tug of dread, small but persistent. That afternoon, she stayed in crowded places. The library, the dining hall, a study room near the main lobby. She kept her phone on silent, worried that each vibration might make her jump. When she checked it later in the evening, she saw several messages from him. They were calm, almost gentle. He said he understood that she needed time. He said he wanted to give her a gift. He said he needed to see her one last time. She did not reply. As dusk settled, she made her way back toward her dorm. The air grew colder. Her breath turned to pale clouds that lingered before disappearing into the dark. She walked carefully along the path, scanning the shadows. When she reached the building entrance, she paused, checking behind her. No one was there. Inside her room, she locked the door and slid the chair under the handle again. She set her phone on her desk and sat on the edge of her bed. She considered calling campus police to report the messages, but she hesitated. She did not want to feel dramatic. She did not want to be dismissed again. She told herself she would see how things looked in the morning. She did not know that across town, at that very moment, he was pacing his living room, his thoughts moving in restless circles. He replayed their conversation on the walkway, the way she stood so far away, the way she said the word over with no hesitation, the way someone else had been watching nearby. In his mind, the story twisted into betrayal again. He convinced himself that she had changed because of someone else. He convinced himself that ending the relationship was an attack, not a boundary. He opened the drawer and removed the items he had purchased. He placed them in a small bag. His breathing grew heavier, his hands unsteady. He did not think in straight lines anymore. He thought in sharp turns and unfinished sentences. The story he had built in his mind had collapsed into something desperate. He left his apartment and stepped into the cold night. Just after 9, Jifon's phone lit up with another message. She did not check it. She pulled her blanket over her shoulders and sat still, listening to the faint sounds from the hallway. People laughing, a door closing, footsteps. She tried to focus on her breathing. In, out, slow and steady. A soft knock came from her door. She froze. A second knock, slightly louder. Her heart pounded hard enough that she felt it in her fingers. She did not move. She did not speak. "Jafon," a voice said quietly. "It is me. Please open the door." Her breath caught in her throat. She reached for her phone and wrote a message to her friend. "He is at my door." Her friend replied instantly, "Do not open it. I'm coming." The knocks grew faster. She backed away slowly, her eyes fixed on the door. She could see the faint movement of the handle, testing the lock. A sound like a soft tap. Then silence. For a few long moments, nothing moved. Then she heard footsteps. Slow, moving away from her door, down the hallway. She stayed still, barely breathing, waiting to hear voices or movement. She waited for her friend to arrive. But the hallway remained quiet. Her friend reached her a few minutes later and knocked lightly. Jifon opened the door with shaking hands. They spoke in hushed tones before deciding she should stay somewhere else for the night. Her friend's apartment again, somewhere safer. They left together. They did not notice that a few floors below, the side door to the building had been propped open with a small rock. The next morning, her RA received a notification about the previous night's noise. It had been sent through an automated system that marked it only as disturbance. The RA did not know the real reason behind it. She made a note to check on Jafon later in the day. But by midday, Jafon had not returned to campus. Her friend tried reaching her and got no response. She grew worried and spoke to the RA, who began calling around. The hours stretched. The worry turned to fear. A report was made. Campus police were alerted. They checked her room and found it untouched. The bed still made, her phone charger still plugged into the wall, her textbooks stacked neatly. By late afternoon, officers expanded the search beyond campus. A patrol car drove slowly past an apartment complex not far from where Haoyu lived. A faint light glowed behind a curtain in one of the parked units. An officer knocked once. No answer. He walked around the building, scanning windows. Another officer checked the front door again. This time, it opened. The room was quiet. A single lamp illuminated the space. A thin smell of chemicals lingered in the air. On a small table near the window sat a phone that did not belong to the apartment's tenant. Within minutes, the truth began to unfold. The hours after the discovery felt unreal to everyone who knew her. The call to her family overseas pierced the distance like a knife. The campus went still with grief and disbelief. Students gathered in small clusters to talk about what they had seen and heard over the past weeks. The RA cried quietly in her room, replaying every conversation she had had with her. The housing office reviewed the misfiled report and the delayed request. The police chief issued a statement about the steps taken and the protocols followed, but none of it answered the question that hung heavy over everything. How could so many warnings be missed? On the evening of the vigil, students gathered outside the center where she had stood only days before. Candles flickered in rows along the stone walkway. Names were spoken softly. Her story moved through the crowd in fragments, each one carrying its own weight. A professor she admired spoke about her kindness and determination. A friend shared how she always helped others, even when she struggled herself. Her friend from chemistry stood at the front, holding a candle with trembling hands. She remembered every message, every late-night study session, every moment when she wished she could have done more. "I do not want anyone to forget her," she said, "and I do not want anyone to think she was silent. She asked for help. She asked again and again." Across campus, housing officials met behind closed doors. They reviewed timelines, emails, and case notes. They saw the errors clearly now: the miscategorized report, the reassignment request that stalled, the mediation suggestion that should never have been made. They wrote promises and planned reforms, but all of it felt too late. In the wider community, the story spread quickly. News outlets covered the case. Advocates raised concerns about campus safety procedures. Domestic violence organizations highlighted the patterns that had been present from the start. The pressure grew for accountability, for change, for someone to say plainly what the system failed to say in time. Her family arrived in Utah days later. They walked the same paths she walked. They visited the places she studied. They sat in quiet meeting rooms with officials who spoke in careful tones. They listened, but their grief swallowed the words. They wanted answers. They wanted honesty. They wanted to know why their daughter had not been protected when she asked. No answer felt sufficient. A memorial was placed near the walkway outside the student center. Flowers, notes, photographs, a strand of paper cranes folded by students who barely knew her but felt the weight of her absence. Among the messages was a simple one written in careful handwriting: "We wish someone had heard you sooner." The campus settled into a slow winter silence after that. Snow fell again, soft and heavy, covering the paths she once walked with a quiet blanket of white. Her story did not fade. It became a question that echoed through offices and classrooms and long administrative meetings, a question that remained unanswered. What would have been different if someone had acted sooner?